Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
If your day sounds like...
we need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... you deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
It is Hot Sheet, Scotty Braun, and Baseball America's J.J. Cooper and Carlos Collazo with you. I am back after a little week off. Great to see you both. And Carlos totally has the backdrop flex today. So before J.J., we even let him say a word, we should just hit first move and get right into it since he's going to lead off with where he's at. And if you're listening on the pod, this will help to unveil some things for you. So let's hit it. Carlos Collazo reporting live from the draft combine. Give us the lowdown, man.
Yeah, this is the fourth annual edition of the draft combine out here in Phoenix. Fortunately, we are indoors, so the heat isn't too bad. But this year, there is a decent amount of prospects at this event. 80 of our top 100 are at least at the combine. Whether or not these players are on the field is another question. One of the biggest benefits that teams get from this event is just the meetings they can have. So in the suites around me, in the suite level here at Chase, all throughout the day, teams are having meetings with their priority targets, getting to know them on the makeup side, kind of picking their brain on how they view the game, just what they're like as players. And then right now behind me, you got outfield drills going on. We watched BP early this morning. We'll get some bullpens. So it's a really good chance to see the depth of the class and for the teams to spend a lot of quality time meeting and talking to a lot of these prospects.
Yeah, I love that. I know, you know, sometimes that can be the difference maker too, JJ, is those interviews and those conversations. So I can't believe it's already year four of the combine. Before we dig into anything else, what have been your thoughts on how this has played out? And has it been a real positive for the scouting world?
Yeah, I think that the scouting world probably, like, there's this kind of the duality of it, right? As an event, it's always going to be tough because there's not a whole lot of incentive for the absolute top players. Some of the top players who are going to get drafted are playing right now in Omaha, and that's a better stage for seeing who are going to be the best draftees than a combine. So I don't think it's ever going to be the NFL draft combine, but for a scouting perspective, this is great because this is bringing many of the top players all together. You can get psychological interviews, you can get medical, you can get all these things that you want to get done, want to get knocked out. Really the things, let's be honest, that are the more valuable part of the NFL draft combine as well. Like, I know it's a show and who ran the fastest 40, but those are kind of things that nowadays are less important because they have player tracking. They have ways of knowing how fast a player is on the field. So those things are less important, but the off-the-field components are as valuable now, if not more.
Okay, so let's get into specifics. Carlos, who is there? Who should we be talking about?
Yeah, I think three of the most exciting players who are here on the field who've actually looked pretty good already today. It's high school shortstops. It's my favorite demographic. That's just such a fun player group. But Kellen Lindsay, the Florida shortstop, he's probably the most high profile, the highest ranked player who has got on the field. His infield that he did at shortstop was phenomenal. All the teams got a chance to see his great actions. He was a very early riser in Florida. One of the most impressive Florida prospects in a class that's really not great for Florida high school, which is a bit unusual for that state. And then you go up to New Jersey, and Luke Dickerson is a shortstop who, over the last month or so, has been a massive riser. Getting a chance to see him hit in a big league field with Wood has been impressive. He's a standout hockey player as well, but the swing looked good. Got to see him move around the field. And then maybe the most impressive player for me so far today is Tyler Bell, who is a high school shortstop out of Illinois, switch hitter, he showed surprising pop with the left-handed bat with Wood, more than I was expecting to see. And then maybe one of the better defensive performances in the in-and-out session. So those three have been particularly impressive. Mike Sirota is in the background now throwing. I think he already just did his outfield throwing, actually. But he was a player who entering the year was a potential top 10 rounder. The stock has fallen a bit, and it's maybe looking more like second. But I'd say those are the guys that are most exciting so far for me.
You mentioned earlier, J.J. Weatherholt's there. He's not going to go on the field, but he is there. And that leads me to kind of ask, because we rolled out a new mock. You rolled out a new mock late last week. And I think probably the headline of that is you had a Weatherholt at number one. Is that like because you're changing it up, or is there some smoke there that Weatherholt might really be a guy who could end up going 1-1?
Yeah, I would not put him there if there was not real smoke to it. I think it is interesting just to work through some scenarios in the draft, but I'm not going to just make up a scenario. That's one that over the last week or so when I was talking with more people, it came up again and again, actually. I still think Cleveland has a wider net at number one than most people expect. I think from the outside looking in, it's a Travis Bazana or Charlie Condon show, which we do have those guys at the top of the board, but there's really not a ton of separation from a lot of these college players. J.J. Weatherholt might have both the best swing in the class, the best pure hitting ability, and also he's like the only player in this top 10 range who can fit at shortstop. So there's a good chance that he's just as talented as these players we're talking about. He has dealt with a hamstring injury both last summer and last spring that maybe make the profile a little bit riskier, but it's a profile that also fits with exactly what the Guardians have done. And from Weatherholt's perspective, if they think he's got a chance to fit 5-8 on the board realistically, and he can take a haircut at number one, lock in more bonus pool, more slot value than he would get in those lower picks, then Cleveland gets a player who they view as maybe similar or just as good as all these players at the top, and they can spread their pool around. So I also want to caution that like an underslot deal at one is not necessarily Cleveland just being cheap. They are going to spend all their money in the draft. It's just a matter of how they're going to allocate those funds.
You mentioned Weatherholt's injury. That kind of leads to the follow-up question I have, which is, do you think if he'd have been healthy all year, that he might have been just in that 1-1 conversation even more so all year? Like, we are talking about the guy who was the D1 batting champ last year. This guy does have a pretty hefty track record of production, pretty hefty track record of hitting. He just missed some time early this year.
Yeah, I think that's a great call. And I think he really would be in this top tier of players more consistently. Because again, he was number one entering the spring. He was moving over to shortstop. Everyone was really excited to see how he's going to play defensively at that position. He just missed about a month and a half, but since he's been healthy, he's been exactly the player scouts have expected. He's hit really well. He takes a great approach to the plate. He uses all fields. He's got power. He runs well when healthy. And the shortstop defense by everyone that I've talked to has been solid. So he's not this sort of elite shortstop defender. But in this class, in terms of a separating defensive profile, just having a chance to play shortstop with that pure hitting ability and power and track record, like you were mentioning with J.J. Weatherholt, I think is enough to get it done. It's just tough when you're missing a month and a half and guys like Charlie Condon and Travis Bazana are hitting nukes left and right, setting modern day records. So statistically this year, it's not impressive, but I think his profile has not really changed. And maybe depending on how you view him defensively, it's only improved this year. So I would certainly view him near the very top of the class.
We have a fan question we'll get to in the chat in just a second. If there's any others throughout the show, we'll do our best to mix them in here about any topic, obviously draft, but also later on about prospect, college game, et cetera, College World Series, all that. So one quick follow-up here for you, Carlos. We've had, you know, a long period of time now with slot money as part of the draft. Do you feel like front offices have enough data now to say, hey, we feel as if these players are similar enough that, you know, we can save some money here and spend it later on? I feel this is a bigger picture topic for our sport, where you have some gunslinger GMs who specify a player and don't believe that, you know, two players are necessarily so similar that it's not worth going all out for one, if I'm making sense here. Mm-hmm. When you have the rare opportunity to pick so high in a draft, if behind the scenes you say, this is the guy I'm banking on, shouldn't that be the top priority? I feel like fans have a hard time digesting saving money at the top of the draft, not for a team being cheap, but just for going for it when, you know, that one player could make all of the difference for your franchise.
Yeah, I think there are differing opinions on how to do this. There are plenty of scouting directors that I've talked to in the past week who view it kind of like you said initially, if they view their guy, they think this is the best player available on the board, they just want to take that guy and move on and be done with it. And I think in general, that's the best strategy to employ. I do think that it is true, though, if you have a similar tier of players and you think the differences are just marginal and the confidence level in your scouting department is maybe not extreme one way or the other, and there's some players who are making a case for player A or player B, in that scenario, I think it can make sense to see, like, okay, is one player willing to take $1 million less slot than the other? And is the $1 million difference in their talent based on how we expect it to be worth it? I think that is a trickier conversation. It just depends on really how the class is playing out. And I think another factor that we might have to talk about for this draft specifically is slot values have moved up about 9% year over year. And I know there are a lot of teams that are kind of looking at those slot values and wondering, hey, this is a significant jump in the expected bonuses for these players while the class that we're looking at is less talented than a year ago. I mean, the slot value for 1-1 is $10.5 million. Is someone really going to break Paul Skene's bonus record by $1.3 million this year? I wouldn't really bank on that. And so I would expect a lot of underslot deals in the first round. Last year, a majority of the deals in the first round were underslot. So it's definitely an interesting topic. Maybe it can get a little bit too in the weeds for the financials. But ultimately, if you think there's a player who's clearly the best on your board, I think you just draft that player and figure out the bonus and move down your board.
Okay, let's get to some fan questions now. We'll do some later on too. I see they're starting to flood in. Pint size. What have you thought of Conrad Kaysen playing in the field, Carlos?
Yeah, we just saw him take In-N-Out a little bit ago. Actually, he's a great athlete. I think he's a really fluid mover, very twitchy. In the box, it was pretty twitchy as well. So I like the hands. I like how everything moves. I think he's got a chance to play a premium defensive position, whether that's shortstop, whether that's second base. I'm sure he can run around the outfield and look good too. So he's looked pretty solid so far out here. And that tracks with what I've seen of him in the past as well.
Okay. JJ, we got another one that you can take. Here it is. Brandon Dillman, if there's one thing we know for sure about the draft, it's that one of the players the O's draft will eventually be the number one prospect in baseball. Oh, more of a comment on that one first.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. There was another Dillman question also that was asking about the Guardians would have to be tempted to take Burns at 1-1 knowing he could help them this year. And I just wanted to make the point that while it sounds great, we saw this last year with Paul Skenes. We saw this last year with Rhett Lauder. You know, like the problem with pitchers is that a pitcher has already been ramped up. A starting pitcher has already been ramped up since January. And probably is going to be ramped down, especially in the case of a guy like Burns. He's not going to pitch for a significant period of time here, basically a month. And so when you have a situation like that, teams get really leery about ramping a guy back up to then pitch high leverage, high impact, the biggest innings of their life up to then. So I think it's likely. Yeah, go ahead, Carlos.
I was just going to say the Guardians have also been a team that doesn't activate many of their players at all after the draft since the draft date has moved back. So that ramp up, ramp down period for pitchers is a great point. And I think even last year, I don't know if Cleveland activated anyone after the draft.
Yeah, good call. Okay. Carlos, we appreciate the time. Now you can have some fun and get back to the combine. Lastly, before you jump out, is there food around? Like, do they feed these guys well? And do you get... in on any of that, right? I mean, if you're at a combine, you really want to eat, you know, some prime fuel.
I have not found the player food yet. I could certainly go on the hunt for that. We've got some snacks, some bars, some chips up here in the media suites section, but I know there's got to be better food down behind the dugout somewhere. I'll be on the lookout for that.
Okay, good. Maybe we'll talk about it next week and see what you find. Have fun out there, dude. Good to see you. Appreciate the time.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Take care.
You too, Carlos Collazo. Follow him on Twitter and check out more of his coverage on baseballamerica.com. And make sure you get a subscription to BA. And please subscribe to this show as well here on the Baseball America YouTube channel. Let's bring in our friend Jeff Ponce, who is a frequent visitor on the show as well. And Jeff, we are about to on our usual adventure.
And I was going to say, it might be insufferable today because he is in Boston. He does have a Celtics jersey just up there, and it's a little bit a little bit too gleeful right now, let's just say.
I had to bring the truth to the show, man. You know, it's important that I represent. We have winners here in Boston. I want to share those winning feelings with the rest of America.
So for those who don't understand the truth pun, we'll just give you the truth baseball topic wise and take a little holiday adventure.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't help you just hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. What I love about Indeed is how much easier it has made the hiring process. Everything I need is all in one place. The ways to contact potential employees, job candidates, all in one place. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BaseballAmerica. Just go to Indeed.com/BaseballAmerica right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BaseballAmerica. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more rings, two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
All right, so we catch updates on Jackson Holliday every few weeks when possible. It's not a fun update. He is hurt, so it does look like we won't see him for a while here. Yeah, here is the injury, right elbow inflammation. And if you're watching right now, JJ pointing to where the injury is at, there's Rock Cabaco with the tweet if you're listening on the pod. Yeah, I mean, JJ, do you want to start before Jeff jumps sure. in?
I mean, obviously, this is disappointing, but at the same time, unfortunately, this is the year where this is kind of something we're seeing a lot of. There's a lot of prospect injuries. With Holliday, it's a setback. The thing I'm kind of interested about this is I want to see how he comes back. I've long felt, you know, we wrote about it in the offseason. His arm is kind of, if there was one tool for Jackson Holliday that's average, fringe average if you're a shortstop, it's his arm. You know, and he hasn't ever complained about, you know, elbow inflammation, elbow pain before, but I will be interested to see when he comes back. Is his arm, it seemed fine this year. Like, I mean, he was, the last play he made was to turn two, on a double play. And then he did play the next day and then he went on the IL. So, you know, this is hopefully a brief setback, but at the same time, we are in a situation right now. This is the year that we'll probably remember for prospect injuries. Paul Skeens, our number one prospects in the big leagues. Our 2, 3, and 4 prospects are currently all on the IL, which that's rough. That's James Wood, Junior Caminero, and Jackson Holliday. Holliday, I should put it in the right order, but Holliday, Wood, Caminero. That's rough that we have that many guys who are hurt right now at the top of the prospect list.
Yeah, and it felt like it could have been even worse last week when Roman Anthony took a ball off of his elbow, I think at like 88, 89 miles an hour. He missed a few games. I know Xavier Isaac, I actually got a question in chat earlier in the hot sheet chat. You can still get your questions in there if you want to. Shameless plug. But he's a guy that's missed a couple of games as well. It feels like some of the top prospects are just dropping at an unbelievable rate. You can plan to go to see and sit on a team or see a particular pitcher, and it feels as if there's a good chance that that guy could get scratched. I know that happened with some folks, though, in Murphy a few weeks back. And it kind of happened to me a few weeks ago. I took a big trip up to Portland, planned on sitting on a couple of games. I was really excited to get my first look at Luis Perales, who was a big breakout that we've talked about on this show for the Red Sox. He came out in the third inning with an elbow injury, and earlier today it was announced that he's having Tommy John surgery. And he was a player we were really excited about, a guy that we added onto the top 100 list and pushed up pretty aggressively based on the changes that he had made to his pitch mix coming into this year. And it just seems to be the same refrain over and over and over again every single week of, you know, who's going to drop next in this top 100. It's been the year of prospect injuries, JJ. I think that is 100% accurate.
So let's tie this into a bigger picture, and also D-Rod with a comment here on top of the prospects injuries. Let's not forget all the pitching injuries too. It's getting crazy. Yes, that is true. Also, actually, before I move on, the elbow injuries to position players has become such a common conversation. So much so that it actually doesn't feel weird anymore to bring it up. I remember it was not long ago when we're going, Tommy John surgery for a position player, or, you know, what's going on with this player's elbow? I thought that's more of a pitching injury. It's becoming quite frequent that we hear about elbow injuries. You know, obviously I'm not going off of any data besides just the conversation of big names suffering from injuries like that, right?
It is something where we feel like we're seeing a few more of them. Although I always go back to my touch point for this is always Carlos Quentin back before he was a D-back. Quentin blew out his elbow, if I remember correctly, his draft year. But they kept playing him in the outfield. And I wouldn't believe this if I didn't have this on my recreation softball team too, where, you know, our best outfielder had a blown elbow. And he basically had one throw in him. Quentin could get, you know, like they would run the dude out there, you know, to come the shorts, you know, they would send the shortstop out so he didn't have to throw the ball, but he kept him out there playing even in those kind of situations. It is something we're seeing a lot of those. We're also seeing, this is also on the prospect side, the year of the hamstring injury, I feel like, or thighs. You know, we've got Caminero, we've got Wood, we've got Jackson Jobe coming back from it now. I feel like we've got like 6 or 7 or 8 significant hamstring injuries as well. The tough thing of all of this is you have players who are trying to get the most out of everything they can. They train very hard in the offseason. This is not something where players ramp up, you know, a week before the season. And that's good, but also it does mean players at the peak of their potential sometimes can also go a little bit overboard sometimes. And sometimes it's fluke injuries as well, but it is rough how many we're dealing with.
Yeah, I think, you know, another injury we're frequently seeing are the oblique injuries. It's almost like the equivalent for position players of Tommy John surgery. And, you know, I know that I've seen some talk of this. I haven't seen any concrete research, so I am maybe talking a little bit out of my element. But I do think, you know, some of the max effort training, and there's good reason why people are doing this in order to optimize abilities and get opportunities in professional baseball. You really do have to be at the top of your game. You know, small margins mean a lot more, it seems like, in the last 5 to 10 years than they ever did before. And I think that's only increasing. And I think we're seeing a lot of oblique injuries with max effort swings, guys trying to optimize for power, adding strength, trying to swing the bat harder. We see, you know, more of an impetus on bat speed. And that's certainly something that folks are training. And there's teams that are focusing heavily on training that. I know the Red Sox have had a great deal of success with a couple of players that were on the hot sheet this week, and Christian Campbell and Cutter Coffey is more skilled guys that added power, added strength, and added bat speed. So I think it's one of those things. It's the give and the take of the game at this point in time where players are training, they're focused, but it could lead to some increased injuries.
So let's tie that into your story on Friday about the quality of production that we're seeing down in the minors. And there it is. Why is the quality of minor league baseball so bad? And the quote here, this is the type of story I didn't think I'd ever write, the type of trite, petulant editorializing about the quality of baseball I'm watching. Go on, Jeff.
I tried to get, I used my $1 words there. But yeah, I mean, I think it's one of these things where I love baseball. I love watching baseball. I think my favorite part of the job, and JJ will back me on this, I love the data. I love watching games on video. I like to be there. I like to see players in person, particularly pitching prospects. Seeing a great pitching prospect really shove against a good lineup is about the best thing that I could see in life. You know, I just really get a tremendous amount of enjoyment out of that. So it kind of hurts to a little bit. You know, when I look at the games that I've watched this year, there's just so many stinkers. I can recall maybe one or two games that were good, close, well-played games, well-executed games. And I think that's in all facets of the game as well. We're seeing a lot less strikes. JJ has some numbers that can back me up on this in terms of the lack of strikes we're seeing throughout the minor leagues. I'm also seeing really bad defense. When I talk to folks, really smart scouts and front office people and analysts throughout the game that do watch a lot of baseball, they're seeing a lot of the same stuff in the minor leagues. I don't think we see it as much in the major leagues. I think it is indicative of a lot of the players that have struggled making the jump from double A or triple A up to the major leagues. I think just that there's a canyon size gap right now between the quality of play in the minors and the quality of play in the majors. And it's a lot of those little things. It's a lot of guys that seem to be out of position. I had said this, I think, in our pregame show, but I feel as if there's times I see lineups in the minor leagues in games for full series where, you know, the third baseman, the left fielder, the first baseman, the DH, and maybe the second baseman should probably all be first base DHs. And that's not really what I was seeing pre-pandemic. And I think, you know, the shrinking of the minor league rosters has had an impact on it. I think, you know, just some of the training methods and things that have occurred. And I think just generally we're seeing players getting pushed up to levels that maybe they're not prepared for. With less players, we're also maybe not seeing the guy who's 88, 89 miles an hour who throws a lot of strikes. We're not seeing the standout defensive shortstop that hits 220, but, you know, can provide 80 grade defense and some assurance behind some of those pitching prospects that plays that should be made are actually being made. And that's something that I see consistently.
It's hard to quantify this fully, like, because how do you exactly lay out, like, if runs are up, is that because quality plays less? If runs are down, is that because quality plays less? But we do have something that is pretty straightforward, which is strike percentage. How often do pitchers throw strikes? And if you go to 2019, which is the last year before the minors were reorganized, last year before the pandemic canceled the season, the strike percentage in low A was 64%. 64% of the time, a pitcher threw a pitch, it was a strike. This year in low A, it's 62%. And I thought at first, I'm like, well, but they have ABS in the Florida State League, the automated ball strike system. So maybe that's what's affecting it. And then so I pulled out the Carolina League and the California League and took the Florida State League to the side. And actually the strike percentage in the Carolina and California League is 61.5%. So it's actually worse than the ABS League. So, okay, I'll throw that out as that's not why this number is dipping. And you say, okay, what does that mean? Well, I just kind of put some round numbers to it. That's 11,500 fewer strikes in A-ball this year than it was in 2019. That's kind of an example just of how, yeah, there are fewer strikes. Now, I think a lot of that is that there aren't that short season, that advanced rookie level. So pitchers that would have gone to those levels are now going to low A, and they're just maybe not as ready at that point.
Yeah, good combo. And then, you know, one more piece of the puzzle is the news today from Jesse Rogers that MLB is just going with the challenge system in AAA, JJ, because, you know, this had been more of a split up at AAA. It's pretty obvious to me, and we talked about this on Foul Territory, that this is a clear indication from the league that this is the direction that they are initially going to go if and when they bring this to the big leagues. Not going off any very specific league inside knowledge, but I do think this will happen within the next 2 years. What did you get from this news?
Oh, I think I went back and looked. I think my first prediction that the big leagues would have challenge and not full ABS, I think was like 2022. Like, this is the way it's going to go. It's something where if you want to do something to fix the most egregious missed calls, but do it in a way that doesn't anger a whole lot of people, this is the way to go. Rob Manfred has now come out and said it. Like, hey, if we go full ABS, we are, as much as just the reality of it is there are catchers whose reasons for being cease to exist the next day. There are catchers in the big leagues who are good framers but don't hit a whole lot. And you're like, okay, if the computer's calling every pitch, that why do I care if you can frame or not? I'm going to look at a guy who can hit we can't even really say call pitches that much anymore. We could, you know, kind of even call pitches and has a strong arm to throw out a base runner, base dealer. Well, if you go with the challenge system, you keep the game much more, it's a much smaller change. But if you do have an ump behind the plate who's really struggling, well, you could get maybe 6, 7, 8, 9 calls fixed over the course of a game if you need it, because that's what the challenge system allows you to do. We've seen it. I mean, again, the fact that we're now going completely away from any games using the full ABS system in AAA is a very strong indicator of this, because every one of these major rules changes that we've seen in the majors have been trialed, have been tweaked, have been adjusted in the minors first. And those adjustments usually are the ones that end up kind of in some form making it to the majors. So the fact that it's going this way is a very strong indication to me that we're looking at challenge system coming to the big leagues, not full ABS.
Yeah, and I think, you know, somebody that watched a lot of AAA baseball early in the season, the ABS challenge system is actually kind of exciting, where I think the just the general ABS is a little frustrating for fans at times. They know that the call is right, but I think some of those sort of borderline calls, etc., when there's a challenge system there and it's quickly and efficiently done, I've seen it not be quickly and efficiently done, and I've seen it be done in 3 seconds. I think it keeps people into the game. It's another reason, especially if your home team gets a call, fans get excited. I think there is some, potential entertainment bonus factor here. It's not the type of thing where there's someone going under the hood and looking at the strike or whatever for however many minutes. They get it on the system, they put it on the screen. You know, they present it pretty well. I know the first time that I saw it was in the Arizona Fall League about 2 years ago, and I loved it. And since then, I much prefer the challenge days versus the straight ABS days, whether that's in the Florida State League or in the International League. And, you know, I have a handful of series over the last couple of years of both.
Okay. Well, yeah, I think fan bases are already warming up to the fact and even preparing for this to kind of take over the sport. So let's finish here with a fan question or two before we jump. And also, I'll let everyone know that if you'd like to learn more about Ben Rice, we'll have a prospect profile clip that you can watch on YouTube that should get released today. Same thing, if you're a podcast listener, we'll have that for you, within the next 24 hours as well, or you can check it out on YouTube. So JJ, you want to hit the first fan question here? Do we have a little beef about the hot sheet?
Yeah. So De Los Santos had a very good week. Again, he's had a lot of good weeks. I would say that he was in that range if you could put him on it and it wouldn't look bad. But at the same time, I'm not going to go with that this was a slam dunk. How is he not on this? It was a good week. There's a lot of guys who had good weeks this week. But at the same time, De Los Santos, just to kind of jump off of that, massive credit to him. It was a Rule 5 pick, didn't stick with Cleveland, goes back to Arizona, destroys AA, gets the promotion to AAA, and so far so good there too. I do think that De Los Santos has definitely done a lot to really kind of bump himself up as his prospect status, even though he was a guy who was already getting attention and was obviously a Rule 5 pick last December.
Okay, and then one more after Davison De Los Santos. This one coming from Army Chow Main. Also, no, it's a couple years early, but Rintaro Sasaki's draft stock. Lots of swing and miss, but when he connects, yes, that's good ... right there.
It's a tough draft profile. I mean, if it's a first baseman, it's not a particularly athletic body. I think I'm putting it nicely. It's power, as you said, there is some swing and miss. And we'll see how that matures over his time as a collegiate player at Stanford. So I think that's definitely interesting. He's an interesting name for the draft league. But it's not a profile that necessarily gets a lot of helium or a lot of money in the draft. I mean, I think we look at a player like Tommy White, who's, a much better version of that player, at least now, and I think probably projects to be a better version, especially with the third base defense he's played. And he kind of came into the year with a lot of questions, and this is a guy that's had as much collegiate production as really any player that I can remember in the recent history. So, he's a really tough profile. It is an exciting time to see a top Japanese player come over here and, try his hand in collegiate baseball, Division I. We'll see what happens, but I would guess it's probably not a top 10 type of pick. It's maybe more, if things go well, a late first rounder, early second rounder. I don't know if you agree with me there, JJ, or not.
Completely agree. I remember, to use another example of this, I remember after Seth Beer had his great freshman year at Clemson, we were getting all kind of questions like, Beer's going to be the number one pick, you know, in a couple of years, right? And it's like, no, I'm sorry, that's just not the profile that goes 1-1. I think he ended up going, you know, at the back of the first round, which is about, I would say, it's not your ceiling, but when you are talking about first base only, without, you have to have exceptional production to kind of put yourself even in top 10 range. And really, like, mid to late first round kind of is, I would say, usually where a lot of those guys go. Tommy White's a great example. Tommy White's going to finish his college career as one of the best sluggers, best, you know, the best, most productive college players we've ever seen. He was freshman year. He was on a star on an LSU team that won it all last year. And you put all that together, and he's still probably not going to be a top 10 pick. Sasaki's got a long ways to go to get to there. But, you know, again, hope it'll be fun to watch. It's going to be interesting. He is kind of a fascinating player as a player is coming over to play college baseball as one of the most lauded high school players in Japanese high school history. All of that's going to be fascinating, but it doesn't make for, if he was a shortstop, I think his draft profile would be a lot more spicy coming into his college career.
And even just top end prospects at first base, like, certainly haven't done him favors necessarily. This is not a great example, but I mean, the 1-1 from a few years back is down in the minor leagues right now in Spencer Torkelson. I mean, obviously he's a much more athletic player. He can play first base pretty well. I think he's been an above average defender, but it hasn't worked out with the bat. You need to be that exceptional at that position, right? To really stand out and to take the sacrifice at an early round or even a top pick.
And Torkelson was like the best college, like, it's talking about a college, productive college hitter. He was going to, if it wasn't for COVID, he might have set all the records almost. And yeah, he's struggling, which is not helping guys in this year's draft, and is not helping guys with that profile going forward. If you're a Nick Kurtz, you're like, yeah, the track record of a Spencer Torkelson and Andrew Vaughn, you know, we could keep going down the list, Pavin Smith, like, these first base college bats haven't nearly been as safe as we kind of hoped they would be. And that hurts the next wave of college first base only bats.
Yeah. Even Evan White, who wasn't known for the bat, that was like the elite glove, but I think the bat should play in the bigs, and same thing. It, you know, it even led to some money for him. So yeah. I mean, got to end on a little bit of a Debbie Downer note, but good news is we covered a lot here. Carlos Collazo at the top, and great questions from the BA chat today as well. You can catch this show every single week. Again, if you want to learn more about Ben Rice, we'll have a prospect profile for you. For Jeff and JJ, I'm Scott. Subscribe to Baseball America for all this great content. This is where BA really shines, with the draft coming up and the College World Series and everything else. We'll see you next week.
Prime Day es el 16 y 17 de julio. Con las ofertas épicas exclusivas para miembros Prime, recibe el reconocimiento que tanto mereces.
¡Wow! Gracias. Ni siquiera preparé un discurso.
Quisiera agradecer a mi familia, que siempre necesita cosas. También a Sam, mi repartidor, por entregarme todas mis ofertas increíbles tan rápido. ¡Te adoro, Sam! ¡Mua!
Compra ofertas en electrónicos, hogar y más este Prime Day, del 16 al 17 de julio.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.